Janie Lee Grace. Welcome to the Natural Health and Sobriety Show on UK Health Radio. My guest is Patricia Peat from Cancer Options. Patricia, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, thank you, Janie. Great. Thank you for asking me.
It's lovely to chat to you. Yeah, I mean, it's been ages since we've had a chat.
Time has flown, but it's always a pleasure.
So I came across Patricia's work many years ago when I first connected with the charity Yes to Life. Back then, I was doing some work with a website, and we were doing very well, amazingly. And I was thinking, I really do want to donate some of the money that we were bringing in to a charity. And it was at that point that I realized, hold on, I can't find a charity to donate to because I don't agree with their work. This was back then. And I thought, oh my goodness, this is really scary. So of course, many people were suggesting, you know, some of the high profile cancer charities. Ooh. And I thought, absolutely not. And it was then that I came across Yes to Life and the fantastic work that they do around education and commitment to the integrative approach to cancer, and I just loved everything they did, and through Yes to Life I got introduced to you and the amazing work that you do. But as I say, it's been a few years, so really good to be able to catch up and hear about some of the stuff that you're doing. Just give us a little bit about your background then, Patricia, because you started off as an oncologist, is that right?
I started off as an oncology nurse and was doing all the running oncology clinics, giving out chemotherapy, doing palliative care, the whole remit, and began through working through my ignorance about everything else and through the great knowledge of my patients at the time, who were being proactive and looking for other things and supporting themselves and doing good nutrition and different treatments, began to realize there was a big wide world out there that was actually rather interesting. Mm. And that began my journey, with great encouragement from those people at the time, I must say, to get out there and find out what was going off. And in those days, more than now, it was certainly a mishmash of stuff, you know, just because it's not orthodox doesn't mean to say it's all good. Mm. But part of my role was to make sure that people were making good choices from the information that was available, you know, avoiding the bad stuff as much as getting the good stuff.
Yeah.
Wow, what you know, and we'll talk about where we're ending up now, Janie, but wow, what an incredible journey that's been.
Mm, absolutely. I mean, when you think back, you know, again, all those years ago when I first came across Yes to Life, cancer was still a thing that, you know, if you got cancer, you know, the big C, still very kind of taboo, not that much talked about. You went down one route and you became a number, in inverted commas, in the system. Unless you were, you know, utterly rebellious, and you didn't, in which case you were kind of seen as, you know, utterly bonkers and woo-woo.
Yep.
And you know, and literally taking your life in your hands, and you know, just how ridiculous that you would think that you, you know, all of that stuff, you know, the only the doctor knows the answer kind of stuff. And of course, you know, way back then, as now, there were many people recognizing that as you say, there are many other approaches that looking at one specific body part or whatever, you know, without taking into account the holistic picture, can be ridiculous. And that sometimes the treatments, you know, the actual was worse than the disease. I mean, is that a fair description of what it was
like
back then?
That's a completely fair description, because the whole approach from about the 1950s, 60s, when they began to look upon mustard gas as being a very good idea and way of treating cancer there, and they went down the chemotherapy route, they completely took out the whole metabolics of cancer, the metabolism of the person. They took the whole person aside and focused on the cancer cells.
Yeah.
And that was, in my view, a very big mistake indeed.
Yeah.
And still is.
Yeah.
Still is.
Yeah. Yep. So, I mean, for anyone listening to this thinking, well, hold on then. Well, what does she suggest? So what does this woman suggest then? That we all run off to the hills, have a glass of juice and everything will be all right?
It really isn't. And I must say, when I first got into this area, it wasn't very scientifically based at all. It is now. Very much. There were extremes, such as lots of things like loads of juicing, loads of coffee enemas, loads of daft things like that. Extremes were the norm. And I think if anybody kind of did an extreme detox, you will find a small number of people might do quite okay on it. You don't hear about the numbers of people that don't. So, but what has developed over the years is the research-based integrative approaches that we have now, and that all very much come from a measured research base of helping the body deal with cancer as well. So by all means, use whatever means you need to in terms of chemotherapy, radiotherapy, but don't allow them to destroy the metabolism. Don't allow the person to become so weak, so emaciated, their immune system so depressed that they can't deal with the treatment. And then they can't deal with the cancer. It's all about balance.
Yeah. I've seen this. I'm sure I've said this to you in an interview before, but I saw that for myself with my mother-in-law. I hadn't actually known her very long when she got breast cancer. And so I literally met her and within a few weeks, apparently, you know, she was told she had breast cancer. She had, I think, two sessions of chemo. And even though I'd only just met her, I had a very strong sense of the kind of person she was, outgoing, strong, positive, many, many things. But literally, it was as if she changed overnight. And by her second session of chemo, I was looking at a person with almost no will to live left in her.
Yeah.
Utterly, utterly distraught, depressed, lifeless.
Defeated.
No hope, utterly defeated. And I remember going in to speak to her consultant. I don't know if you'd even be allowed to do that now, but I asked directly what, you know, this is obviously incredibly invasive. What hope do we have of it helping? And his honest art, he actually said about 20% success rate. Now, you know, really? I mean, I've even heard less than that, actually. So she was going through this that made her literally, utterly, utterly lose the will to live. And she was going to be having God knows how much treatment
for a
potentially 20% success rate.
Yeah.
It was utterly pointless.
And was that success cure or was it response to treatment?
Well, exactly. I mean, this is the other thing that I've heard said in the past that, you know, that in the UK, so for a long time, they were claiming a fantastic success rate of people surviving cancer. But what they meant by that was they lived for 5 years. Well, I don't really call that survival. That's,
indeed,
you know,
not.
So I totally understand this. But having said all of that, you know, it sounds to me like you aren't saying that no one should have chemotherapy. I'm guessing you believe it has its place sometimes, but we need other stuff around it to support.
Absolutely. You know, cancer options is about options. And what we try and do is look at that person's situation and what is the best of everything, the absolute best of everything that is going to support them, get them the best treatment. You know, let's look at immunotherapy, which has emerged of recent years.
Yeah, just explain what it is.
Right. Okay. So we've had kind of traditionally, we've had chemotherapy, which is really destructively knocking cancer cells back in the hope that they will, you know, you'll eradicate them all. Doesn't happen very often because cancer cells are what we call metabolically flexible. They learn, they evolve, they mutate, they find their way around. So they come back. Genetic, it's not a genetic disease at all. It's metabolic. So gene therapy never got going. Immunotherapy involves trying to reactivate the immune system and either block pathways that cancer cells are using to get there or try and reactivate the whole body system, which sounds great. And of course, you know, fantastic. We're actually getting treatments that will work on the immune system. The problem is, because again, we're not looking at the individual person, and we're not preparing them for treatment, which is a large part of what we do, the success rate across the board around the world is about 20% response. So 80% no response. And the reason for that, we know, is because they've got a really, really unhealthy gut, mainly because of just had chemotherapy, or their immune system is suppressed, again, you know, often by chemotherapy. So by all means, yes, use the best and the best of everything, but work, measure what's happening to the person, get them ready for treatment, help them sensitize. The individual person can do a lot to help treatment work on all sorts of levels. And that is kind of what gets ignored, which, you know, in my view sounds absolutely crazy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Why would we do that?
Yeah, totally. So, you know, since it's been such a long time since we have spoken, I'm guessing there has been, well, obviously there's been lots of changes, as you say, in approaches, which is great. We'll come on to that in a moment. But has there also been, I mean, it feels to me like there's been a huge rise in the numbers of people getting cancer. Is that true or not?
That's absolutely right. Frighteningly, of more recent years, for various reasons, a big increase in different types of cancers, aggressiveness thereof. I went home to my husband about 2 weeks ago and I said, crikey, I said, that's two people in 2 days in the 40s with late stage pancreatic cancer.
Wow.
And I says, I never, ever used to see this. I used to see people in the 70s, of course, 80s, maybe sometimes in the 60s. 40s? No. The biggest rise in cancer at the moment, Janie, is people under 40 with colon cancer.
Wow.
Under 40, you know, which, and aggressive cancers.
Yeah, and we hear about these turbo cancers. This is a new word that seems to have popped up. Whatever that means, like it all happens horribly quickly.
It happens horribly quickly, and all the person is doing okay, and all of a sudden it massively escalates. Professor Angus Dalglish of St. George's, who's an oncologist, has actually spoken about this and links with COVID vaccines, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Very, you know, anyone can see that in the public domain, that there's concerns about what's happened there and what's driving these things on. But also, you know, this comes back then to the whole point of integration is, unless you have got the type of cancer that's going to be completely eradicated by that treatment, be it, you know, that could be like testicular cancer, some lymphomas, etc., you've got a chance of the cancer, the chemotherapy, not completely eradicating it. So what's going to happen then? Is the body going to be in a position to play its role to come forth and control the situation and keep the person well? Well, that won't happen if you use standard of care exclusively by itself. Of course it won't, because the actual suppression of the immune system, the damage, the oxidative stress is phenomenal. We know it is.
Yeah.
So, and of course, as well, if the person loses weight, loses the ability to eat properly, loses their whole nutritional status, it's a slippery slope.
Right.
You know, those are the areas that we work on.
Yeah.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
So, I mean, is there some good news, you know, when I'm guessing that, you know, when people come to you and they find out more of these options and they're able to put in place some of this holistic stuff, whether it's things they're doing for themselves through their, you know, their diet is going to be a big one. I mean, still to this day, I don't understand why the medical profession don't kind of get that bit, but you'd think they would.
Yes, indeed.
But, you know, once people do start to take back control and bring in other integrative approaches, is there some good news?
There's some excellent news, actually. There's some really excellent news that I think integrative approaches, no matter what you choose to do, can be outperforming standard of care, because you're not getting that loss, that dimension. You know, when I started in this area, it was very nutrition based, which was great to some extent, but the rest of it was a bit of a vacuum, as I say. What's developed since then is mainly the research base to support the fact that we can test and measure and analyze what's going off in the immune system, what's happening with all the different elements, vitamins, minerals, what's happening, where the weaknesses are, where we need to target, and the layers then that people can put in place. And this evidence is out there. There's so much research on all of it that all the different layers are important of using nutrition, of using exercise, of the simple stuff, which is vital, making sure the person is sleeping, making sure that they are resting, that it's all holistic, making sure that they're getting the right nutrition. And now there isn't one diet for cancer.
Mm.
We know that when we test metabolically, we can work out how the individual cancer is metabolizing. So what fuel sources is that using? But also, how does that person react to different nutritional approaches? You know, people, one of my concerns is the information has grown so much. People will very frequently be diagnosed with cancer and they go onto the internet, right, what do I do against cancer? And a million Chinese whispers come at them saying, you should be doing this, you should be doing that, you should be doing that. And a lot of the time people choose things to do for fear of missing out on something. Oh, I'm not doing that. Gosh, I must. And then they get very stressed, confused, spend a fortune, don't have a measurable approach. And when you start to analyze both the person's situation and their cancer, what pathways it uses, you can then bring in the other things, such as hypothermia treatment, heat treatment, which makes cancer sensitive, boost the immune system, hyperbaric oxygen therapy. I get just about everybody I can down to the local MS center, get hyperbaric oxygen therapy, about £25 a session. Absolutely fantastic against cancer. We start to then use different supplements for different things, very, very specifically tested to see what is appropriate for them.
Mm.
They can also then bring in the you know, apply when it's appropriate, the use of different repurposed drugs. Now, repurposed drugs against cancer has been a big breakthrough. They've been around forever, really. And repurposing drugs essentially is using a drug to block a cancer pathway that isn't a chemotherapy, that is used for other things that doesn't have that really damaging, detrimental effect. So, for example, metformin is a diabetic drug, works on cancer in about three or four different ways. It's antifungal. And let me come back to antifungal in a minute. Remind me, because that is really interesting. Statins are used a great deal because lipid pathways are used by cancer. Propranolol is used. Low-dose naltrexone, my favourite, is fantastic. So there are now something like between 20 and 30 different repurposed drugs that people can use to either help their treatment to work better. Let's say, for example, doxycycline, an antibiotic, helps to kill stem cells when used alongside chemotherapy. This is all research proven. So all those layers are there. And then we have various integrative clinics which can work using intravenous vitamin C, topping up people nutritionally when they're really struggling with chemotherapy, using all sorts of different things in those respects. So the layers and the layers are getting bigger and bigger. But one of the most important things is that the basics are important as well. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean if somebody can't manage, can't afford, can't do the big intensive stuff, that by doing the simple things, they're not having benefit. And the biggest example of that is fasting.
Yeah.
And fasting with people talk about, well, how do I cut down the amount of glucose, the amount of carbs, the amount of fatty acids that might encourage cancer to grow, and not cause myself nutritional harm? Do some intermittent fasting. Simple as that. 16-8 will really cut it down. Do a 2-day water fast. Immeasurable benefits. Really, really fantastic. cheap, you know, and it's the cheapest, simplest thing you could do against cancer. So people don't have to be concerned that they can't afford, they can't do massive things. Anybody who comes to me, my biggest issue, my biggest aim is that their program that they're going to do not only informs and empowers them, but is manageable, it's affordable, and it's doable.
Yeah.
If they're completely stressed out by it, I've done a very bad job.
Yeah.
You know, they're not feeling supported. It's not, people very easily fall into the trap of, I can't do enough. You know, I've got to work. You know all the words that get used with cancer? Fighting, brave, warrior, all that.
Yeah.
Clever is the word you want.
Yeah.
Let's be clever against cancer. Not let's wear ourselves out trying to do too much.
Sure.
Definitely.
Now, I know you talk about functional testing that can help us, you know, in terms of reducing the risk. What do you mean by that, and how can we access functional tests?
Well, functional tests is a generic term that means let's look at how the body is operating. And that has developed massively in the last sort of 10 years, 5 years in particular. So, it's changed my practice. It's changed everyone's practice from kind of trying to perceive what might be happening and understanding how cancer operates to being able to measure what's happening with everybody, with their blood sugars, their cholesterol, their lipid levels, their inflammatory factors, to what's going off in the gut. You know, how's that affecting? Because everyone's gut is entirely different. You can look at hormones. Most women diagnosed with an early breast cancer get surgery, and then there's now you're going to have radiotherapy, then you're going to have chemotherapy, then you're going to have hormone therapy for 10 years, and they're going like, whoa, hang on a sec, you know, well, about 10 years of those drugs, etc. And what we do is look at what's happened to that individual person.
Yeah.
What is the perfect storm that has caused this issue? Because it is an individual perfect storm. What's happening with their hormones? So what has gone wrong in the first place that we can help put right, that we can measure is put right, and they know that it's put right for when, for example, they do 5 years of hormone therapy and they said, you know, okay, that's it, you stop now. Well, why? What's happened? What do we know? We don't know anymore. So it allows people to really explore where things, you know, might have added up. And then the biggest, you know, and then one of the most interesting, I'm sorry, it's a big subject, but it's epigenetics above the gene. So cancer, not a genetic disease. It's not. There's very little about it that is handed down genetically. Epigenetics is how our body operates with our environment and the food we give it, the oxygen we give it, the exercise we give it. And by looking at epigenetics, you can get a very good idea of predicting where your weaknesses are, how your body metabolizes food, how your liver detoxifies, are there any issues there? And that, again, gives you the blueprint for the future. It gives you, you know, you work out exactly what's right and wrong for that person. Not what's right and wrong against cancer, what's right and wrong for the individual person. So I you know, one of the networks I belong to, which is international, so interesting, I was on a meeting last week, and most of the practitioners have had cancer.
Wow.
They've had cancer, they've been on that journey, and they've gone, wow, I've learned, I've empowered myself, I'm now going to help other people. And they have, you know, they've taken courses, they've studied all the, because a lot of all this is studied to degree level, to PhD levels. You know, it's a profession in itself now. It's not just something that people come along and pick up.
Yeah.
You know, they're really, I'm amazed that the medical world fails to recognize and give credit to naturopaths like they do in America. Naturopaths are doctors in America.
Yeah.
To our nutritionists, who are, honestly, I work with a lot of them, I train a lot of them. they train to such a high standard, and yet they're still viewed as a kind of semi-quackery.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, there's a world apart from a good, you know, integrative nutritionist to an NHS dietitian.
Yes.
It's a world Sadly. Apart, isn't it? It's not the same yep. thing at all. In terms of functional tests, I mean, one would need to find a functional medicine doctor, presumably.
Or functional medicine doctor, or a naturopath, or a okay. nutritionist. Doesn't have to be at the doctor level, not at all. Right. There are some things in the cancer world, we can measure things like circulating cancer cells. So we can get a better idea of ongoing analysis, and some of the genetic tests, yes, you know, I have access to doctors that we do. But the vast majority of functional testing, which is not just for cancer, it's right across the board for anybody who wants to understand how they, you know, how to stay well and how to operate within this toxic world, because that's the big problem, isn't it?
Well,
you know,
yeah, absolutely.
This world has changed so much. But they can do that. They can work. You can become very well informed, because our medical setup, you know, hospitals, GPs, etc., they are not focused on a person being metabolically healthy.
No,
they're
absolutely.
Not trying to get anybody.
No, they're just firefighting, aren't they? Literally firefighting the disease, whatever it is.
Yeah, and right in all ways. I've just played golf today. I did sneak off. And one of the ladies I was playing with, I know her. I know her husband. They're both in their 60s. They both fit well, play golf regularly. And they're both struggling like mad because they've been stuck on statins.
Yeah.
And this was a conversation we were having on the golf course as to why are they on statins? What is going off with all this? She doesn't even understand why she's on them.
Nobody's
explained it to
her. It's just
properly.
A repeat prescription.
Absolutely.
This all the time with clients who have been put on, women who are stopping drinking, and they've been put on HRT and antidepressants, often both.
Yes. Yes.
A, without being asked about their drinking, and B, they've been on them for 20 years and they just keep getting a repeat prescription. And when you ask why are you on antidepressants, they can't even remember.
No, absolutely not. And the way for people to become metabolically healthy is through their lifestyle.
Yeah.
And through their nutrition and sleep and drink and all those different things. And what we're aiming to do is, you know, when things go well with people, is to, you know, for the whole medical side and the supplement side and everything else to do less and less and less, because the person takes charge. It's about them becoming their own healers.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It really is.
Yeah. You mentioned to remind you of the word antifungal.
Thank you. Yeah. Let me go down that rabbit hole. But that's an interesting emergence in recent research. And I'm seeing it on both sides. I'm seeing it coming from the American drug companies in the medical world and ours. There's a book written by Mark Glinton, Cancer Through Another Lens, which looks at, now one of the things, when somebody has cancer, the biggest thing they need to understand is that cancer cells interact with the body's environment. So they will pull in what they need to survive. And if they're finding the stuff there that they need, like inflammatory cells, inflammation, various bits and pieces, and a very low functioning immune system, that will enable the cancer cells to overcome that situation. And the recent research is showing us that cancer cells are pulling in viral and bacterial and cells and making them into fungus,
right,
which is protecting the cells. Because we know a lot of people get given chemotherapy and those cells survive. And we're now finding out that the process may well be that it's the viral and bacterial cells. And let's face it, what's happened to this world in terms of viruses the past few years? And then we're talking about turbo cancers that are surviving. And a lot of things in the integrative world that we've always used against cancer, things like berberine, for example, to modulate glucose, is an antifungal. A lot of these things have had antiviral and antibacterial elements, and we're getting to a point now we're going to be able to start measuring this in the body and working out what the level of influence is from there. So cancer is being unmasked in terms of how, the more you learn about cancer and how it metabolizes, the more you will learn about how to defeat it. If you view it as just something that needs annihilating with cytotoxic drugs, you're not going to defeat it.
Yeah.
Highly, highly unlikely. And in America, drug companies have come up with the same theory, and they've got drugs to block the pathways that viral cells use to get into cells.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
I know you mentioned that you're doing a lot of work, and you're sort of you're part of more of a community now, as it were, of people doing this kind of work. Tell us a bit more about that.
Well, it's always been slow in the UK. The medical world has been very, very slow to recognise, you know, the development of cancer treatments has left out the whole metabolism, as I say. It's just ignored it. Nutrition, not important. I mean, you know, common sense, really. So that's always been a difficult thing in the UK. But I've got clients all around the world, and we see different things reflected in different countries. And what's emerging now, I belong to anyone knows our world, Dr. Nasha Winters, who is an American naturopathic doctor, is developing this whole community, the Metabolic Terrain Institute of Health, which I belong to. And I'm doing her master's course at the moment, which is phenomenal and hard work. She's training doctors. There's a lot of doctors training in how to use integrative methods alongside orthodox. Very much so. She's trained about 400 doctors already. And they're in all the different countries around the world. It's easier in different countries because they're more open to these things. We don't have, it's not such a, the UK, the NHS is such a closed shop. You get what you're given and that's it. And you're told nothing else matters. And to be part of this community where we are generating research, Nasha is fundraising, she's building a hospital, we're going to have our own laboratories. This world is now emerging really, really strongly alongside standard of care treatments. There's still resistance to it, of course, because, you know, what is viewed as research is a big randomized double-blind trial. Nothing else is viewed. And that just leaves out, but if we do this to a person and we measure their what happens to them metabolically and it's very positive, well, that's not research. Yes, it is, actually.
Yeah.
It is.
Well, I mean, one of the issues there is, of course, so much of the research that we are allowed to take on board will have been funded by big pharmaceutical companies.
Exactly
so it's in their interest for it to come out a certain way, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely so. Most of the repurposed drugs are off patent. Yeah. Low-dose naltrexone, which, you know, really is a marvellous, marvellous immune builder. Again, research done by Professor Dalgleish, costs about £20 a month. And, you know, really is one of my go-tos when it comes to getting. So mistletoe therapy, again, been almost eradicated in the UK, in the NHS, and the research around the world is growing. So we're kind of, you know, UK and Ireland, I'm sort of helping to run the whole European side. You know, we are losing out here because our doctors are just not being open enough. And there needs to be a real willingness from them to be open, to recognise what's going off, because this is, you know, not only is it scientifically viable, if it wasn't, we wouldn't be doing it, but it's what people want and need. Mm. And they know this. You know, they're subject to so much negativity. I can't tell you how much time I spend with clients preparing them to go and face their oncologists.
Well, yeah, I was going to say that's the problem, isn't it?
Yeah,
exactly. We really do need a situation where people feel confident to be able to bring in their. I mean, ultimately, we know how we feel ourselves. We know in our gut what's right for us. So if we're given those options and we're given that knowledge, We absolutely don't want to be treated like a naughty child and told, no, you'll have to do exactly what I say.
And that's exactly what still happens in a large proportion of cases. And my biggest problem, to be quite honest, Janie, is we don't get a uniform answer from the medical world. There's no uniform coming together of let's look at this and say what we think about it. It depends on which oncologist I get. I might get a referral from an oncologist. I might get support from another one. I might get told that I'm talking a complete load of nonsense from another one, but they'll never ask me for the evidence. That is very frustrating. You know, that's the area we're really working hard to get at.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned the Yes to Life charity earlier, which again, they started some time after me and again in something of a vacuum. But next month, they're in the Houses of Parliament celebrating their 20th anniversary.
Mm. Yeah, I'm going to be there. I should see you
fantastic.
There.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, really looking forward to
you
it.
Know, and, you know, your support right the way through with the book, the Cancer Revolution, everything has been absolutely fundamental. But they've had to hang on in there. The tenacity that's had to be shown just to keep that charity going.
Yeah.
I take my hat off to them, absolutely. I think they're fantastic.
But
what a shame it's that's the case.
Well, it's great to hear the work that you're doing, Patricia, and it does sound very exciting and positive and hopeful. And really what you do, you know, the name of your work is on the tin, isn't it? You know, cancer options, that's exactly it.
Yes.
Have a look at the options. If you do nothing else, have a look at the options. And look at that, you know, sort of holistic approach. And similarly for people in terms of thinking, okay, how can we look after our immunity and ensure that we reduce our risk? Again, it goes back to looking at the whole picture, really, doesn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's about it's about knowledge. It's about power. I always say to my clients, you will know more about yourself and your cancer than your oncologist ever will.
Oh, absolutely.
So, sadly, you know, such is the nature of how busy everybody is in oncology. It's get put on the, you know, you did get put on the conveyor belt. Well, that's fine. That's absolutely fine if that's right for that individual person. But if it's not and they want other things, then they have the right to do so.
Yeah.
They absolutely have the right. And they do. I don't think oncologists have the right to say, no, that, you know, you can't do anything else, or that's not, you know, that's absolute rubbish, unless they present a scientific argument proving their point. Getting on my soapbox there a bit, but that is my bugbear. Just give a generalized, that's a load of rubbish. That's no good. That's no good. We're more scientific than they are at times like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Patricia. It's great to chat to you. So the website is canceroptions.co.uk, and we can find you on social media as well. And I'll see you in the Houses of, where are we going? Houses of Parliament? Somewhere flash, aren't we?
Yes, we're in the House of Commons, darling.
Oh, House of Commons, okay.
I look forward to seeing you
there. I shall see you there. Thanks ever so much, Patricia. Appreciate it.
Great pleasure. Thank you, Jenny.
You've been listening to the Natural Health and Sobriety Show on UK Health Radio.